We're talking cheese on this edition of Wisconsin Weekend. One word, cheese. What more is there to say? Thanks for being with us on a Friday. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. It was a record year for entries at the U.S. Championship Cheese Contest held earlier this month in Green Bay. More than 2,500 entries from 35 states, a lot of cheese to judge. And we have someone who is no stranger to winning the U.S. and international titles. You can join in along the way at 800-642-1234. Marika Penterman is a U.S. champion cheesemaker who manages a herd of more than 400 dairy cows with her spouse in Thorpe, and her signature cheese is Marika Gouda. She was also the first woman to win the Wisconsin Outstanding Young Farmer Award. Marika, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Well, thank you, too. Thank you for having me this morning on the radio.
Well, let's start with Gouda. Your Gouda is just award-winning, so many ribbons, so many prizes, and you also have quite a bit of variety when it comes to Gouda. What is the taste like? What sets it apart?
Well, the cows. I believe that our good Gouda cows, all the cows have a name at our farm, and we call it our Gouda Ladies. I think the freshness of the cheese, because we are a true farmstead creamery, and that means that we have the farm right there where we also produce the Gouda. And I think the good Wisconsin milk is one of our secret ingredients that everybody knows now. And that gives a really freshness to the cheese. We make it within 5 hours. So when the cows get milk, that milk goes straight from the cows into our cheese fat.
I understand that your cows, it goes basically hours from when you milk the cow to when it becomes cheese.
That's correct. So the freshness, I think, is one of the ingredients that you will taste. It's very creamy.
And so the judges tasted more than 2,000 cheeses. They used half and half, apparently, as a palate cleanser in between cheeses. What do we know about the judging of the championship?
Yeah, they just about 2,555 entries. And the judges, they came from all over the industry, being expert in what they're doing. I cannot imagine. Sometimes I look at them and I'm like, how are they going to do it? Because there are so many high quality cheeses, and it's a tough competition. And what they do is they take the cheese and they deduct points from the cheeses coming to the, and it all ends up having the best U.S. cheese champion cheese in the competition.
Well, it sounds like they're going to have to really know how to differentiate on their palate what they're tasting and feeling and just embracing in that cheese. I mean, really fine-tuning in their palate.
Especially in the top 20, because in the top 20, you have different categories, Gruyere, Edam, Gouda. You have all these different cheeses, and then the gold medal winner will go down to the top 20. So they will take about 80 of the award-winning, the gold medal winner, and then they will take 20 out of that. And then out of that 20, there's such a variety, and it seems almost impossible for me to taste the quality of that and compare it to each other.
We're talking with Marika Penterman. She is a U.S. championship cheese maker who farms in Thorpe, Wisconsin. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you want to know about Gouda? What do you think distinguishes cheese that you've tasted? And what do you want to know in terms of how Gouda is made? We're at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Marika, take us through the process of making your cheese, because we know that it goes directly from your dairy cows into making in the cheese process. But I understand you have like 4,000 wheels of cheese at any one time aging?
Well, actually more. It's more like 9,000. So in our aging room, we have a lot of cheeses aging, and all the cheeses, well, what makes, going one step back to your first question is, what happens is when the cheese comes in our cheese fat, we add cultures to it. It's a bacteria that helps cheesemakers guide the process. So it is possible to make cheese without cultures, and they did that in the earlier days. But this gives us the advantage of controlling the flavor of the cheeses. And after a little while, when the temperature is right and the cheese fat is full, then we add rennet to it. It's an enzyme that makes the milk coagulate, and it makes it more in a solid mass. That goes in for half an hour, and then you check it, and if it's the right moment, then you start cutting, and you get a solid part and the liquid part, solid part being the curd and the liquid part being the whey. And when you do Colby, it's a different process than when you make Swiss or when you make Gouda. In our case, we make a Gouda and we drain some of the whey and we add hot water to it, warm water. Gouda is a water wash curd, and we let the curd then wash in the whey with water added to it. And then between Gouda and Gouda, you can wash the curds once or twice. You can play with temperatures. You can play with your wash water. And when the curd is right, then we pump it into our drain table where we press the curds together. And that's where the first pressing happens, and then we cut blocks out of it. And those blocks go into a nice round mold, and then it goes under the press for 2 hours, and then we have a nice round Gouda wheel that we then put in brine. And we let it sit in the brine for about 60 hours, and after 60 hours, we add it into our aging room, and that's where the cheeses are aging.
And how long do you age the cheese?
Our average wheel is about 9 months that we age. But we sell some right after 60 days, or we sell some cheeses around 2 years or 3 years. And, so that's because our cheeses is a raw milk product, we have to hold on to at least 60 days. And after that, we can sell them.
It sounds like a very systematic process, but it all starts with the cows. You have to keep them happy, right?
Exactly, yes. And I kind of pride ourselves that we have very happy cows here in Wisconsin. And our cows, they have a cow spa always in the barn. They have rotating cow brushes that when they are itchy, they can go against it and it starts itching their back. We have sand because we believe that that's a good way for them. It's like us laying on the beach almost. And there's an automatic manure scraper. They have water close by because the cow drinks a bathtub full of water every single day. And then a wheelbarrow full of food every day. We try to be, the comfort of the cow is very high in our mind and in our barn.
And you have a herd of about 435 cattle, is that right?
Yes.
Yeah. Have you increased your size over time as your business has grown? How does that work?
No. No. We are within city limits, and we are bound a little bit on our cow numbers. So, we have around 400 cows.
We are in the good graces of a cheese conversation here in this edition of Wisconsin Weekend. Marika Penterman is our guide. She is a U.S. championship cheesemaker, and her signature cheese is Marika Gouda. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Cheesemakers, what is your story? What does it take to make award-winning cheese? Join in. You can email ideas at WPR.org. We'll be back in a minute here on the Ideas Network. You're with us for Wisconsin Weekend here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're getting to the heart and soul of cheese making. It's a passion that puts Wisconsin in a class of its own. At the recent U.S. Championship Cheese Contest, Wisconsin cheese earned a total of 168 awards. And one of the biggest winners was Marika Gouda. And we're learning about the old world cheese making methods with farm fresh raw cow's milk. You can join in the conversation at 800-642-1234. What do you want to know about how cheese is made? And what do you want to know from master cheesemaker Marika Penterman? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Marika, can you tell us more about your story, the story of your farm, and why did you and your husband decide to come to Wisconsin all the way from Holland?
Yes, I do have to correct one little thing because it wouldn't be fair. I'm not a master cheesemaker. Master cheesemaker is when you have your license for 10 years, which I do have, and then you join into a program for 2 years. So those master cheesemakers are very hardworking cheesemakers that have studied very hard to get their title. So I don't want to.
Good to know. Good to know.
Hopefully someday I can get the title too. So my partner is also from the Netherlands. We both grew up on a dairy farm, and he really wanted to farm. But Holland was just, Holland fits about 4 or 5 times in the state of Wisconsin, and it has about 18 million people, like versus the 5 million here. And so that was one of his reasons to immigrate. And then he started in a partnership a dairy farm here in Thorpe in 2002. And a 350 cow dairy farm, and they grew that to about 900 plus cows in 10 years. And then I joined them a year and a half later, and we have 5 children. We do things very quickly. Mm-hmm. And after the first 2 were born, I really wanted to do something too, started my own business, and I was really missing cheese because coming from Holland is not so adventurous in a lot of different cheeses as here in Wisconsin. So when I went to the supermarket over here, I saw all these different cheeses, but I could not find my Gouda. So that really started me thinking, and I would always ask family or friends if they can bring me some Gouda because I couldn't find it. And then one night, there was a cow calving, and I would say with the birth of that calf, also the birth of the cheese-making adventure. And I went back to Holland, worked along one day with a farmer over there, and then one day with another lady farmer over there. And then I went back. They told me to go and get my license because Wisconsin is apparently the only state on planet Earth that is actually requiring a cheesemaker's license, so far I know.
And can I stop you right there? Because yes, we have a question. Well, we have a question from a listener. Kenneth in Janesville has called in to ask how the cheesemaker licensing process works here in Wisconsin. And he would just kind of want to know how that works.
Yeah, and there are 2 different ways. And I did the basic short course cheesemaker's license. And that means that you have to do 5 courses and an apprenticeship of 240 hours. So I went that route. I did some of my courses at the River Falls, UW River Falls, and some in Madison at the university. And they're involving pasteurization, the make process. And at that time, I was just out of, just came back from Holland, and the language barrier was a little thing. So one of the questions I will never forget because it was, how many hats does a cheesemaker wear? And I'm like, a hairnet, a white cap. So that was not how the question was meant. But yeah,
lost in translation.
Yes. So there are a lot of things that you learn during the course. And then there's also a different route. And then for people that work already, a minimum of 18 months at a creamery, and I think they do 2 courses and a basic the cheesemaker's test.
Marika, okay. I'm wondering, do you feel like you get better at cheesemaking over time, over the years? Do you see yourself improving at it?
I think consistently. consistency is a big thing, and that's really a big thing for me because I'm more the clock method. But you really have to measure. I do think that through the years you become better, of course, because you can recognize certain things that went wrong and you can adjust it. Like when the water temperature, you cannot get it up to a certain temperature, you can correct it through different ways by washing it longer or a little bit water to it. So you become a different way and you know which route is better for your kind of cheese. You can pick up things. And I'm a lucky cheesemaker, so I still have a lot to learn, and I'm not very strong in the science behind it. So my whole education has been always in the agriculture. So I actually know a little bit more about a cow than about cheesemaking still, because there is so much to cheesemaking. And that's why every year we actually have a consultant coming from Holland who knows, who's an expert in Gouda. And he's here for a week, and we go through the whole process, through the whole company, and it's really very educational, and we learn a lot, and we...
I feel like I think I'm learning about a Gouda audit. I think you should call it a Gouda audit, right?
Yes, exactly.
A Gouda audit from Holland. Talking with Marika Penterman. She is a U.S. champion cheesemaker farming in Thorpe. You can join in the conversation at 800-642-1234. Did you participate in the cheese championships or did you attend? What were the best cheeses you've tasted and what's your favorite Wisconsin cheese? Join in at 800-642-1234. Tweet us at WPR Mornings. So, Marika, your farm imports Dutch herbs, spices, cultures, and equipment to make the cheese. Why is that important to the final product?
So when we started making Gouda, there was not much. Like, for an example, when I mentioned it to my neighbor, we're going to make Gouda, and he says, what is Gouda? And the second question was, do you have enough Dutch people in this area that will eat it? And I'm very proud to say he likes it now, too. But there was a lot of things that was still unknown about Gouda, and I wanted to make sure that we would make as close as possible an authentic Dutch Gouda, but then a Wisconsin one, but as close to the flavor from Holland. And that's why I had a cheese set custom made for us in Holland. We have some Dutch pine boards that are now also, we have some Americans pine boards. So that's, and certain herbs are just unique, and you try to always find a niche in the market. And so that's why we went that route.
Well, we have another question coming in, and they thought Gouda had to be made from goat's milk. You use cows. Can there be a variation there?
Oh, yes. You can make Gouda from goat's milk, probably even from camel milk. And there are different rice and milk sources that you can use your Gouda recipe on it. We have not done it, and I have that question often that people think it's made from goat's milk. And I always wonder if it's because of Gouda, goat.
that could be possible.
Yes, but I'm not sure in the percentage, but I bet it's like 90% it's cow's milk.
Let's take James now, coming from us from Krakow. James, hi.
Good morning.
What's on your mind here?
Simple question. When I imagine in all this testing, she makes mistakes. Who tests the cheese, and if it's not good, do you throw out a large batch of it, or what do you do with it?
Aha.
Yeah. We are actually very small. Our cheese set is about 8,000 pounds of milk that we make into about 800 pounds of Gouda. So we have a very small vat. But what happens is when the cheese is 5 weeks old, that cheese gets tested with an in-house team that consultant from Holland actually guided through us how to test the cheeses. And if it's not good, if it's not up our standards, we put it first on hold, and then we'll test it later again. We always test one wheel when it's about 5 to 6 months old to see how the aging, how the real continued aging. And if it's, and we also tested within those 60 days, Salmonella, Listeria, E. coli, and Staph aureus.
Well, Marika, thank you so much for joining us.
Yes, yes. Thank you for having me. And please come visit us in Thorpe. We have, people can see how we make the cheese. We had about 150,000, 160,000 people last year visiting us.
Lots of people, lots of visitors. Marika Penterman is a U.S. championship cheesemaker managing a herd of more than 400 cows with her husband in Thorpe, Wisconsin, and her signature cheese is Marika Gouda. Coming up, Chippewa Falls kicks off a year of events this month to celebrate its 150th anniversary. We'll travel back in time to understand the city's history. Stay with us on the Ideas Network.
Tall. I was sleeping on a tailgate, singing Willie Nelson songs. You were sleepily smiling, but you always sang along. I was 17, I was 10 feet tall.
We are pulling up to Chippewa Falls on Wisconsin Weekend. I'm Kate Archer Kent, and that is the song 10 Feet Tall by Them Coolie Boys. How about we classify them as alt-folk Americana? Punk, bluegrass, rock and roll, it's all good, right? Blending the genres. They're part of the lineup helping celebrate 150 years of Chippewa Falls. And we're exploring Chippewa Falls' heritage and what makes it unique. Are you a longtime Chippewa Falls resident? Maybe you grew up there. Tell us your story, or perhaps you've visited on vacation. What attracted you to the area? Join in at 800-642-1234. Jackie Booz is the tourism director for the Chippewa Falls Chamber of Commerce. Jackie, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for having me.
So what is it about Chippewa Falls right now and for the past several decades that makes this community special?
You know, how much time do we have? You said we have about 30 minutes. it's an outstanding community. I'm a transplant. My husband is from Chippewa Falls. When we moved here, it was just a sense of small town community with just a big heart. And you see it in everything that we do. When it comes to events, when it comes to quality of life, there's just so much great things that are happening and continue to happen. And talking with people that have lived here, you always hear resilience. So there's change in what happens. Industries change. Our population stays very much in the same bracket. But we're seeing a resilience to a lot of different changes in our climate and our world. And Chippewa Falls just stays very strong. And it's really exciting to be a part of that.
Help us understand where the name Chippewa Falls comes from.
Well, we have a lot of history. And of course, we have some of our native tribes that were in our area here. Of course, the Chippewa River runs through. And just having some of that heritage, especially right downtown. So we have, and I think we'll probably jump into some of that, but, where everything started in Allen Park, right on the starting point of Chippewa River there, we do have that rich heritage. And just being able to, call that into the falls and being just a part of that.
Well, let's go way back. The city received its proclamation in 1869, but before that time, what was significant in the city's foundation and how it got started?
Yeah, we had, starting with the fur trade. So everything from fur trade to lumber started on the waterway. And so we had hundreds of different backgrounds that were coming to the largest lumber yard sawmill under one roof was right in Chippewa Falls, where currently the Chippewa Riverfront is being developed, which is a new park for us. So we had a lot of people coming in, learning the new ways, learning how the lumber industry was being produced and was a major player for us. And then, of course, the river was used for that industry.
and General Zachary Taylor would become the 12th president of the U.S. What was his influence on the lumber industry here in Wisconsin?
Yeah, so we had he had a really crucial notation in the Black Hawk War, and that took place a little bit southern of our area in the Illinois border. From my understanding and talking with a couple of our historians yesterday, it seemed to have been that, you know, when he was involved with, there were warring tribes at the time, which were making it extremely hard for the waterways to be used and for travel to happen. And being able to have a treaty that was put into place allowed for, obviously, our logging industry to continue to move forward. That's my understanding during that time. And, of course, then shortly thereafter, when he was the president, that, again, was a large industry for our area.
Talking with Jackie Booz, she is Tourism Director for the Chippewa Falls Chamber of Commerce, talking about the city's 150-year anniversary, and you can join in at 800-642-1234. Are you a longtime Chippewa Falls resident, or does your family have roots there? Bring your story, perhaps your vacation in the area. What do you enjoy? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Jackie, we've been discussing the history, but, you know, as the Chippewa Falls marks 150 years, what is tourism like today for the community?
It's extremely strong. You know, we have a lot of the historical content that really drives a lot of questions. We have a strength because it's a four-season destination, so we're able to highlight really great things when all of the snow is around. And then on the flip side of that, be able to give the water recreation, again, that downtown small charm experience. And it's just a really great way for us to be able to push that out seasonally, nationally as well. So there are people that haven't been able to experience some of the things that we take for granted at times, but it's always part of our messaging so we can get that messaging out further.
What are some of the attractions that are a real draw for your visitors?
Well, of course, we have Line and Kugels.
and we'll get to
celebrate.
That.
Yeah, we helped celebrate their 150th 2 years ago. We kind of joke in-house that funny that, you know, a brewery was able to get established before the city, but just a telling of the times during then.
All you have to say is just saying.
exactly. So, yeah, we have, of course, we have the Line and Kugels brewery. Then we also have some beautiful park systems. We have Irvin Park. That was gifted to the city through William Irvin, and it's a 320-plus acre free-to-the-public amenity that has walking and biking paths, beautiful overlooks. It also has a zoo and a petting zoo as well during the summer months. It's a really great draw, and honestly, we live here, but we bring our kids all the time in the summer. It's fun to burn off some of that energy and just be kind of surrounded by the natural beauty of that park. And then, of course, our downtown, you can do a historical walking tour of the buildings downtown and the significance and some of those families that were the starting point of the start of development of Chippewa Falls. And so being able to have that rich history as well is really great. We've got some amazing organizations in the community, like the Historical Society, the Genealogical Society, Chippewa Falls Main Street. All of these different entities play into the larger picture of who we are and help tell that story to a lot of different people looking to them.
Well, let's circle back to Line and Kugel and how it became a staple here in Wisconsin and in Chippewa Falls. How has the brewery shaped Chippewa Falls, you know, in history and today?
Yeah, well, you know, we see one thing that always gets, again, driven home to us is six generations. So it doesn't matter how that industry changes. The Line and Kugel family has stayed connected to this brewery, which speaks volumes to, again, the people that we call our neighbors and friends and family. The brewery in itself continues to mold itself and make changes. So it does offer an amenity to those people that might have experienced it 5, 10, 15, you know, years ago. But to be able to still walk back in time, walk through the brewery, understand the process, but then kind of have this new age experience in Liney Lodge, where events take place and concerts happen, and merchandise, of course, continues to evolve. So it is, it's been the staple and a strength in our community, and they're always looking to help out with other things like capital campaigns and being involved with events, and just being a part of new stories and new chapters. So they continue evolving, and it's been outstanding for us. And you can talk to some of the brewery employees that have been there for a very long time. My husband's great uncle worked there, and he's in the 150th book a couple of times. And it's just that piece that people are proud of, as a piece of Chippewa Falls and family.
Chippewa Falls is also the birthplace of Seymour Cray, who is known as the father of supercomputing. What is the town's ties to the tech industry?
Well, it's actually extremely strong today, too. But really, the technology industry was our next step. So after the lumber started shifting and changing, we went full into the technology and that type of industry. It's very exciting when we're talking with visitors that they don't realize that he was part of the supercomputer, and having his name throughout the community is one thing, but Cray is still in existence and is still extremely strong, employs a lot of people in Chippewa County, and puts us on the international map for this type of technology. We also celebrate all the advancements through Seymour Cray with our Chippewa Falls Industry and Technology Museum, which is right downtown, where you can actually stand next to, walk through a supercomputer. When it's crazy thinking about today, our computers are the size of our cell phones. So to be able to walk into this museum and talk with some very knowledgeable individuals that can walk you through what the process used to look like and what this meant to Chippewa Falls, but also placing the United States on a different scope. So it's really exciting that it's right downtown here in Chippewa, and people can see it and be a part of it. Ask the questions and maybe even take a picture with, you know, a life size of Seymour Cray and just be a part of, again, that piece of history that is really rich in Chippewa.
We're talking all things Chippewa Falls on this edition of Wisconsin Weekend. Jackie Booz is our guide. She's tourism director for the Chippewa Falls Chamber of Commerce. Have you visited or toured the Leinenkugel Brewery before? What influence does it have on the community? Do you have experience in the lumber industry? Is it part of your identity? You can join in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas@wpr.org. We'll be back in a minute here on the Ideas Network. That is Wisconsin native Phil Cook playing his song Another Mother's Son. He's now based in North Carolina, but he's coming home this summer to celebrate the 150th birthday of Chippewa Falls. We're learning all we can about Chippewa Falls' heritage on this edition of Wisconsin Weekend. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Chippewa Falls was granted a charter by the legislature in 1869, and they'll host their first event of the celebration on Monday, March 25th, on the actual anniversary of the Chippewa Falls' founding. Are you a Wisconsin history buff? What can you share with us about Chippewa Falls? Is this home to you? What do you love about your town? Give us a shout out at 800-642-1234. You can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Jackie Booz is tourism director for the Chippewa Falls Chamber of Commerce, and she stays with us. Jackie, what are some beneficial changes that Chippewa Falls has made in recent years to really strengthen tourism and keep the town a draw for people outside the area when there is a lot of competition to go in so many different parts of the state because there's a lot of attractions out there?
There are, and we're lucky as a state to have that. Some of the things that we've been doing here within Chippewa Falls and also Chippewa County, expansion of bike trails, better access to waterways if people want to go kayaking or canoeing, being able to give up-to-date mapping as well for those individuals that are coming. One of the exciting things that will be kind of concluding this fall and into early next year is the trail expansion of the Old State Trail Wave. So you actually can go 70 full miles throughout our region into Dunn County and Eau Claire County and be able to really make an outstanding, you know, day, weekend, whatever you're looking to do on the bike trail system. So things of that sort. Of course, when we have new attractions coming with the wineries, some other breweries that are popping up, being able to market those to different clientele that might have been here in the past and gotten to experience the Line and Kugels and the downtown, but now we're adding to that experience and being able to really market that correctly and get it to the right people.
And so on March 25th, you're going to start rolling out the birthday festivities.
Yeah.
What will happen that Monday?
So what's going to happen is they actually, this is being headed up by the Heidi Center for the Arts. Deb and her team have taken on kind of this founding birthday celebration, which is wonderful. So they're going to be inviting Jerry Way to be doing some performances. They'll also be speaking with William Irvin's great-grandson, who will be there, which will be outstanding. So they have a tie-in to one of the original, a generation of one of the original families that really are noteworthy for our area.
Jackie, I want to pause you right there because we have someone on the line here who would love to talk about Chippewa Falls. Carol from New Richmond. Carol, what's your connection?
Well, I lived in New Richmond for 10 years. My husband worked for Cray. So we have since moved to New Richmond, Wisconsin.
And what do you love about Chippewa Falls quickly?
Oh, just the education is outstanding. You know, I think that you have so many of these little schools in their really nice small classes, but then also the fact that you can, if you wanted to, you could send your children through all levels up to high school at the Catholic school, not to mention, you know, there's not many places that offer, like I know Miss Deborah offers dance, and then there's this, and I think I might have heard you even talking about it, I know there's a new dance studio or fine arts building. And it's just so full of history.
And Carol, I'm going to cut you short there. Jackie, it sounds like Carol really appreciates the arts and education.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're very lucky to have that Chippewa Falls and Chippewa Valley wide. And I think what Carol was getting at as well is you can just skip over a little bit south and go to the university or even over to UW-Stout and have that education right here in our backyard to allow for us to come back.
Jackie, thank you for joining us. Jackie Booz is Tourism Director for the Chippewa Falls Chamber of Commerce. More information about the town's anniversary can be found at gochippewafalls.com. And now it's time for Wisconsin Life. Let's go fishing. Here's producer Steve Gotcher.
Trout fishing conjures an image of sparkling sunlight reflecting on a rushing stream, and a fisherman in hip boots confidently whipping his pole and casting a line into the moving water. Early trout season, which is catch and release only, runs from January until early May. That image is a little bit different. Ron Davis paints us this picture of a father and son trout fishing expedition in March.
It was futile. A stinging March wind gusting across Timber Cooley Creek and my cataract clouded eyes made threading a hair-thin tippet into the eye of a trout fly no larger than a peppercorn practically impossible. I thought wistfully of the warm car and thermos of coffee waiting up on Olstad Road. My son, Kellen, perhaps sensing my impending retreat, sloshed up the creek. "Having a problem?" he asked. Yes, I was having a problem, but it was nothing that magically wiping away 30 of my 65 years wouldn't fix. Here, let me do that. He quickly tied off the fly, then said, cast right there, just behind those rocks. While he watched, I tried some self-conscious false casts and rolled the line down. It was immediately clear I'd wind-knotted my leader into a little mess of monofilament around the tiny nymph, rendering my offering to any trout looking for breakfast preposterous. I reeled in and began playing cat's cradle with the tangled web. My son rolled his eyes and held out his hands. He untangled the knots, deftly looped my fly into the eddy behind a pile of field stones, and handed me my rod. Soon I splashed out a little brookie. The inevitable reversal had happened. Child had become father to man. As Kellen headed back downstream, I remembered taking him trout fishing for the first time. It was the May opener. He was 9, and I'd roused him before dawn with the promise of donuts and hot chocolate. We bumped a few miles west on Nottleson Road in my old pickup to the upper reach of Peterson Creek, narrow enough at that point to jump over with a few running steps. Blundering down through the muck and emerging skunk cabbage, I showed Kellen how to point his rod backwards to avoid snagging in the tag alders that clawed at our jackets and pants. I cautioned him to walk softly. Browns and brookies hiding in the undercut bank spooked easily. In the gathering dawn, I skewered on a half of a nightcrawler we'd pilfered in the backyard the night before, and I tried to explain how to gently flip the split-shotted rig just up from the undercut so the current would push it under, out of sight, where the fish lived. His first effort was clumsy and left the worm in plain sight on the sandy bottom, but I was shocked to see a nice trout flash out, grab it, and dart back under the bank. He's got it! Pull him out! With one of my hands on the rod, we lifted and swung Kellen's first trout into the grassy hummocks behind us. Back on the timber coulee, I continued lunging up and down the slippery banks on a bad knee, snagging flies in overhanging branches and spooking trout after trout with my ridiculous impersonation of a fly fisher. Mumbling, grumpy responses to any offers of help, I had to wonder why Kellen would want to take this old man fishing. Later, though it pained me, I muttered a begrudging thank you for his nursemaiding me around. Hey, he said, how many times have you done the same for me? Of course, he was right, but somehow the return for those kindnesses is not something I'd ever sought or ever thought I'd need.
Ron Davis is a retired English teacher, a freelance writer, and a columnist for BMW Owners News. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Television in partnership with the Wisconsin Humanities Council. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Find more Wisconsin Life at wisconsinlife.org and on Facebook. I'm Steve Gotcher.
And Wisconsin Life is part of our weekly edition of Wisconsin Weekend here on The Morning Show. What's happening in your part of the state that could reach all corners of Wisconsin? Send your ideas for Wisconsin Weekend to mornings@wpr.org. That's mornings@wpr.org, and we'll explore your tip. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is the Ideas Network.